You're listening to Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson on PLIR, Prayerful Living Internet Radio. Now here's your host, Corrine Walson.
Today's topic, atonement. For those of you who are familiar with the word, the most common definition means to make amends for a wrong or injury that one's committed, as in atoning for our sins. And this concept stems from a belief that God's aware of our wrongs and that we're punished for these wrongs because, or unless, we make up for those transgressions. While I'm all in favor of transforming our behavior to become more Christ-like, I'm not on board with the belief that God knows our faults and punishes us for them. On the contrary, we are told that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. And I know that God is love, and as we walk in love, we walk with God. So I'd like to offer a different concept regarding this important word, atonement. And just for kicks, I got online and I looked the word up. Dictionary.com has three definitions. The first one is satisfaction or reparation for wrong or injury, amends. The second one is the doctrine concerning the reconciliation of God and humankind. And three, says Christian Science, the experience of humankind's unity with God exemplified by Jesus Christ. And then Merriam-Webster defines it as, one, the reconciliation of God and humankind through the sacrificial death of Jesus. Two, reparation for an offense or injury. Three, Christian Science, the exemplifying of human oneness with God. So we're going to discuss door number three, our unity and oneness with God. If you take the word atonement apart, you get at-one-ment, and it's the experience of our unity and oneness with God. And unity is defined as the state or quality of being one, singleness. So I'm going to speculate that probably 99% of the listeners of the show have been taught or have accepted the concept that God is up there or somewhere else and that we're here on this earth and that some tremendous unexplainable void exists between the two. And for purposes of today's show, I'm going to ask you to simply be willing to set that belief down or aside for half an hour. Be open and willing to hear something new and allow yourself permission to just think openly outside the box, to ask whether what I'm going to share with you resonates with you and feels like you're recalling the truth. The Bible teaches, and you've heard me utter many times before, that we live, move, and have our being in Him. It sounds nice, doesn't it? It's comforting to think that God is that near, that He loves us. Okay, but it says we have our being in Him. In. Not next to, not apart from, not a ways off, not on a good day, not when we've been to church for six Sundays in a row, and not just when we've spent time in the Word. But we always live, we always move, we have our very being in Him, in God. There's no separation suggested by this word in. So why don't we take this scripture literally? Well, because we know and are governed by what our five senses tell us. And as we sin, are sick, experience lack or confusion, depression, and so on, everything we rely upon reports to us that we definitely do not live and move and have our being in Him. If we did, we'd experience heaven, not the hell our daily lives have a tendency to dip into. We don't have any evidence and nothing to support this alleged at-one-ment with God. So we skip on by the scripture and anything like it because it doesn't ring true with the human experience. Well, I hope by now you are already beginning to question what that human picture tells you. I mean, we've discussed enough about the limited five physical senses. They report a perverted, distorted, half-lit, upside-down picture of what is really true. We believe the world was flat at one time. We believe the sun circled the earth. We believe that matter was made out of actual physical stuff compressed together, and that what we see is outside of ourselves and that we have no influence over our experience. Well, all of that has been proven to be completely false by science. We now know that our beliefs literally create our experience, that changing our beliefs change our experience, or HC equals HE, human consciousness equals human experience. We know that matter is actually energy at varying frequencies and that our thoughts and beliefs can alter and manipulate matter or the events around us. I've talked at length about how understanding the truth of who and what we are heals the so-called physical body of any ailment. Understanding the nature of God and your relationship to Him brings supply and harmonizes relationships. But even as you hear these words, don't you still think of God, of Him, as abstract, somewhere out there, intangible, out of reach, and that you are here trying to figure out the most direct path to Him? I know I did, and occasionally still do find myself falling into that belief pattern. Well, I've got some truth news for you. Breaking news. You ready? You are not separate from the God that created you. There is no space between you and God. There's no valley, gully, mountain range, infinite space, time, and planets between you and God. When I describe God as being ever-present, filling all space, don't you still think about there at least being some line of separation between you and God, kind of like in a coloring book, where you color a picture, but there's lines that you fill in with different colors? You might be able to accept that you're in the presence of God, but that you and God are still separated by a line or inches or a small space, right? Something in you would not, cannot go past that thought. Well, this lie is as old as time, and it's been drilled into our way of thinking since we were born. The movies depict God as the white-haired dude upstairs. So many religions teach us how to perfect our prayers and our lives so that our prayers may be heard and answered by God. We lift our prayers up to Him. Lift them up? Up where? Oh, you know, up there where God is, away from us. I want to draw you back to the word atonement. On page 18 of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy teaches that atonement is the exemplification of man's unity with God, whereby man reflects divine truth, life, and love. These are names for God that the Bible gives us. So let's take life, for example. God is life. God isn't part of life. Is life. He is the life in all of us, in all living things. Well, since God is all in all, or omnipresence, meaning all presence, and God is life, then there is no life apart from God. There isn't a second life, a separate life, or another creator of life. There is one infinite, perfect life, and that is God. We, as God's image and likeness, reflect this life. We know this because we know we're alive. So if God is your life, where is He? Where does He reside? He is the life that animates you. He is within you, without you, around you, above you, beneath you. He is all of life, and He is your life. You are not separate from this life. You live in Him. He lives in you. All right, if your ego's already kicked that one out, take this pitch. Love. God is love. Love is God. When you love another, that's God. When another is loving you, that's God. There's not another source of love. We are not all separate creators of love. There's just one perfect divine love. And as God's creation, we reflect this love. We are one with it. It's who we are. We're not separate from it. How do we know? Because we love. And where does it feel like this love comes from when you experience it? Did you have to plug in a charger somewhere? Did you have to get a subscription before you gave some out? No, it comes from within. It's there. Love is there because it is who you are. It's who you are because you are God's image and likeness. Now, I keep using this phrase, image and likeness. When you stand before a mirror, your image does exactly what you do, right? You can't move faster than your image. You can't jump into the mirror's frame and then have your image appear later. Whatever you do, your image does it exactly the same time, same speed, same way, without deviation. That's unity. That's your relationship to God. You reflect Him. You aren't God, but you aren't separate from Him either. Pretend the sun is God and all the rays all together represent the Christ, or the real man made in God's image. And then each individual ray represents each of us. Each ray's source is God, and each ray contains only what the sun gives off. Each ray is connected to the sun and reflects the sun perfectly. Now, in your visual, replace this with the word love over the sun. So it's a giant moving source of divine love, and each of us are love's rays extending outward. We are infinitely attached to our source, and love is what extends through each of us. And we are each individual manifestations of this one love. We each have our own unique and special combination or way of showing and demonstrating this perfect love. This love is God expressing himself through us, through you, through me. When someone is loving towards us, guess what? That's in reality God loving you through that person. God is love. And when you give love, that's God moving through you and extending out. Everywhere you see evidence of or experience love, that's God himself. We are all, each of us, magnificent, perfect, eternal, unique, creative, awesome, individual expressions of God. Are you getting this yet? Can you picture this in your mind? An enormous sphere with billions of extensions coming off of it, each one representing God's idea. Each of them connected to the sphere or source or God, each one pulsating with what the sphere or source is putting out or creating. Each one different and distinct from the next, a unique, perfect combination of all that the source is, but uniquely exhibiting those qualities, no two alike. Another synonym for God is mind, total intelligence, the sum of all knowing, all creating. The sphere or source is this mind, and each offshoot is connected to this mind, capital M, mind, reflecting this intelligence. Each offshoot, you and me, we, our mind, knowing itself. It can't help but create because that's what it does. And since God is spirit and not a physical body, what it is creating are spiritual ideas, constantly creating, evolving, knowing, giving out, perpetuating, experiencing, calculating, enjoying, sensing, expanding on its ideas. We are these ideas. We are the spiritual offspring of mind. We are love's creation. We are spirit's children. We are the sum total of all that God is, and each of us is unique and awesomely reflects him. We are not like anyone else. We each contain a unique, one-of-a-kind, never-to-be-duplicated combination of God's substance, and we were created by him to express our special blend of qualities. We are not separate from God. We are at one with him. There is no division. Mrs. Eddy says that the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. Well, that's because the good we do is God. God alone is good. Good is God. So when we are being good and doing good, being good to others, we're expressing our divine and direct connection to God. And because God is omnipotent or all power, we access this power when we are good and do good to others. Follow? So notice that as you allow these thoughts to enter, you're going to start experiencing the strongest resistance to these truths because your ego or mind with a small m survives on the premise that you are separate from God. That you've got a separate mind, that you yourself are a creator, and that your physical creators are your mom and dad, and that you are defined by your body, your status, your job, money, relationships, any titles. It requires you to believe what the serpent sold Adam and Eve, that you're a mini-god, knowing good and evil, that you're a creator and have power apart from God. And we bought it just like they did, right? And we suffer. Just like they did. all our misery stems from the great untruth that we're separate from and cut off from a judgmental God. It's been the biggest ripoff, the largest fraud ever committed on man. But truth is dawning in this age, in our time. We're tired, and we're not getting the answers that we want from the sources we've been going to. We're frustrated, and we don't trust anymore. And you know that thing is, that the nagging, the part that won't give up on its search for truth, even though it's tired and frustrated? You, the real you, waiting and knocking to be uncovered and realize we are figuring out that we're asleep to who we are, to what we are, to our heritage, our birthright, our inheritance as the children of all that is. All that he has or is ours. And all we need to do to claim it is to wake up. I get so excited and carried away when I think about all this and what it means for all of us. But let's go back to that word atonement. Allow me to share a part of an article that I recently read that really turned the light of understanding on for me on this issue. It's called Love. What a word. And the author, when she uses the term science, she means divine science or Christian science. And she writes, in science, everything is one. The starting point is God, and God is one. Thus, God expresses his own oneness, manifests his own perfection, constitutes his own infinite individuality, and identifies himself in countless forms of beauty and goodness. Identity is the multiplicity of form by which the one ego, or the capital E, or infinite individuality, identifies itself. She goes on, science can only be grasped from the basis of one ego, not one ego surrounded by billions of little egos that reflect it, but one ego reflecting itself in countless spiritual forms and forever remaining one ego. The human concept of family is a unit composed of many egos, father one, mother one, each child a separate ego, whereas science declares one ego as father, mother, son. And further on, she explains, love does not start with many and make these one. Love starts with one and expresses itself in one harmonious whole, one infinite, indivisible self-expression. In this one, there is neither superiority nor inferiority, for love reflects its own perfection and excellence in endless variety of form, outline, and color. Man, when I read that, I just got it, because I've been thinking that we're all individual little expressions trying to do our best to be the reflection of the one awesome God, but no, it's one awesome God reflecting outward, and we are the manifestation of that reflection. You and your Father are one. The difference is, Jesus wasn't asleep to this great fact, and he knew it so well that his faith was complete understanding. And this understanding allowed him to demonstrate this law of unity between man and the Father. He never saw a sinful or sick man or woman. He was only and always conscious of the truth. He saw the perfect image and likeness of God in all who his eyes rested upon. No matter what the world said, did, or showed, he was never moved by the picture. Jesus came to show us how to know the truth. He promised us in John 8, if ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So there you have it. The way to know the truth that sets us free from the dream of life in matter or separation from God is the truth as Jesus instructed his disciples. He gave them the Beatitudes. He taught love and forgiveness, everything he taught, everything he did, was in complete opposition to the serpent or mortal mind's conditions and rules. As we follow his example and incorporate his teachings into our lives, we are changed. When we love, love changes us. When we walk in truth, truth changes us. When we do good, God changes us. Remember, the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. The power to destroy the dream and awake to our true likeness is found in doing good, being love, seeing love, practicing forgiveness of ourselves and of others. This is the way. It brings our attention back to our eternal and indestructible oneness with God. It ignites the unbreakable bond we have with our Maker within us. We experience our atonement or at-one-ment with God. It's the substance that songs and poems are written about, that movies and TV shows are based on. It's what inspires the artist and compels the dancer. It's what our testimonies are about. It's what makes us cry happy tears. It gives us chills. It surges through our hearts and minds. It's Emmanuel, God with us, right here, right now. Following Jesus' example is the purification process, where the false is revealed and sloughed off. The fire separates the dross from the gold. The real man is brought to light, and the false and mortal man is put off and out of your experience. This purification process is our demonstration of our atonement. We're reconciling ourselves to our true nature. Every time we turn from dishonesty to honesty, from lust to chastity, from judgment to forgiveness, from selfishness to charity, we're exemplifying our at-one-ment with God. As we follow Jesus' teachings, we're putting off the old and putting on the new man. We're purifying ourselves, even as he is pure. And when we purify ourselves, we enable ourselves to see the real instead of the unreal. And it is in this seeing that we can demonstrate the way that Jesus Christ did. We can demonstrate supply when our bank account shows overdrawn. We can heal the sick when the medical community sentences us to days, weeks, or a life of misery. We can free ourselves and others from sin when the world says you must go through a lengthy, drawn-out process, and only then your chances of overcoming are iffy. Have any of you heard of the New York Times bestseller entitled E Squared? It's by Pam Grout, and its cover says, 9 do-it-yourself energy experiments that prove your thoughts create your reality. It reiterates what I've shared about how human consciousness constructs your human experience in this grand illusion we share. How everything is thought and how holding your intention to something specific without deviating from it will bring it into your experience. I want to share something that I read last night after I wrote the majority of this lesson. She writes, praying is not a matter of bribing God. It's simply understanding the higher laws that override the lower law of the physical plane. To plead or beg or to act like it's not here is to suppose duality, not unity. And unity is what we're aiming for. You have to live under the assumption that your intention has already happened. You have to feel as if it has already come to pass to get those ducks lined up, to get all those waves and laser-like coherence. I don't know if you know anything about laser technology, but it works a little like Congress did on September 12, 2001. Remember how all those cantankerous old senators and representatives completely forgot they were Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives? How the only thing in their minds was, I'm an American, by God, and they sang God Bless America in one great, big, unified chorus? Well, that's how laser works. Unlike ordinary light, what has lots of different types and sizes of wavelengths, lasers have wavelengths of only one size, which lends them to pinpoint precision. This is how to make your intentions. Or it is if you wish to see something appreciable happen. Jesus didn't doubt for one second that there was plenty of food to go around. In fact, one of the reasons Jesus was crucified was that those in command thought he was altogether too confident. How dare he be so bold as to think he could make crippled people walk and lepers dance? But Jesus didn't think that he could not do these things. He knew he could. He knew the truth of who he was, which made his mind a veritable laser. He didn't stop to question if a blind man could see. After all, the gift of health and perfect self-expression is everyone's divine right. And he didn't ask if water could become wine. He knew he had the right to command the heavens and the earth. In fact, that's the only difference between Jesus and you and me. We're still wondering. Wow. When I find somebody I don't know who is saying what I've just said and what I've just written, I know God has a funny way of just, you know, confirming what he's sharing with you. It's a second source. And I saw that. I said, okay. I just get so excited. This is it, everybody. When you connect science with Jesus' teachings, you unlock the key to the universe and our total dominion over it. You're no longer at the mercy of this illusion, but you master it. It's the understanding of our unity, our at-one-ment with God, and the nothingness of matter and its so-called rules. That's the key. Your true nature is spiritual. You are the collection of all perfect and right ideas, uniquely assembled and reflected as you. You possess all that he is and has. This you that you currently believe is you, it's not even a thumbnail of the real you. You're so much greater, so much more powerful, so much more awesome than you can even dare to imagine. Let's start using truth to shed the old ways of viewing ourselves and others and claim our inheritance together. I can't wait to see what God has in store for next Friday. Talk to you then. Much love.
Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson is broadcast on PLIR, Prayerful Living Internet Radio.